This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under the radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Alethea Kasman. This week marked the one-year anniversary of the devastating shooting at Michigan State University. Last year, three students were killed and five were injured as a shooter stalked two buildings along the campus.
And it didn't take long after the shooting for Democrats in Lansing to pass legislation to change the state's gun laws. Those changes went into effect this week. And among the new laws was a so-called red flag law. Now, a family member, current or former partner, a mental health professional, etc., can petition a court for the temporary removal of a person's firearms if they are deemed a threat to themselves or others. We spoke with State Senator Sarah Anthony about this new law.
I'm a responsible gun owner. I believe in the Second Amendment. I do also believe that with all of our rights, they do have limits. With this big job that we have in the legislature, sometimes incremental change can seem too small, but it is making sure that we're progressing towards meaningful solutions long term. So yes, I mean, study after study shows that things like extreme risk protection orders and safe storage, these actions do save lives. We're obviously going to continue to work towards broader solutions, but they're big steps in the right direction.
The package also included safe storage requirements for firearms, universal background checks, and eventually lawmakers also passed restrictions on firearm purchases for those convicted of domestic violence offenses. And like you said, Shayna, this happened pretty quickly after the shooting at MSU last year, but these were also all policies Democrats had been talking about for quite a long time before this shooting happened, and they just sort of were sparked by this event and they took quick action.
Yeah. And since then, many top officials have called for more work here. And I guess we're going to have to wait and see what happens on that front this year.
Right. The actions that they took after the shooting last year were sort of billed as a first step. But we haven't seen a lot of movement since then after those things. So some of what people are talking about is ending immunity for gun manufacturers. We have a pretty broad law in the state that provides that. And also more restrictions or regulations, I should say, on firearm stores.
And it seems like one of these things that Democrats definitely have an appetite for. They definitely have been talking, as you said, for a while about changing the state's gun laws. But I do wonder if, because they've already passed laws on this topic, if it's going to get sidelined for other items on the to-do list, like transparency bills, the budget, economic development, and there's a lot more. I mean, there's no shortage of things that Democrats want to get done, especially given that they could lose that trifecta that they've been enjoying at the end of the year.
Agreed. I mean, not to sound like a broken record here, but House Democrats are tied in the House right now, mm-hmm. So they aren't going to be able to do anything like this without Republican support, which just isn't going to happen. By the time late April rolls around and they have, you know, their voting majority back, there's not going to be a lot of time when you think about the budget, when you think about the election coming up, and if some of these firearm regulations might be too much to do before November. So I think if I were to guess on this, if we see more gun regulations this year, I think it'll be in December.
Well, let's get into our full conversation with Senator Anthony. We talked with her about MSU, transparency bills, and so much more. You can hear that right after this break.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Mishmash. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Alethea Kasman. Today we have Senator Sarah Anthony here. Senator Anthony is the chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee and represents the Lansing area. Senator, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be on.
Well, this week marked the one-year anniversary of the MSU shooting, and we were wondering, what sort of reflections do you have for this date? What has been on your mind as we come up on this very tragic anniversary?
Sure. I stood beside Senator Sam Singh, who represents MSU in the East Lansing community, earlier today on the Senate floor, and his remarks were spot on. He talked about the impact that this has had on the broader community, not just the three lives that were tragically, you know, cut short, but just how this has impacted the way all of us look at each other, look at gun violence prevention efforts, how we, you know, just think about each other as, you know, kids are walking across the college campus, how important law enforcement was that night and the coordinated efforts that, you know, allowed us to quickly act as a community. And my heart just continues to go back to the days after the shooting, in which young people gathered right outside of my office here in the Capitol, and they told lawmakers to be quiet and to listen and to act in a way that lawmakers in the previous legislative terms just had no appetite. And although, you know, gun violence prevention was going to be a part of the Democratic majority's, you know, plan to try to address, I tell you that that moment just jump-started these caucuses to act quicker and to really listen to student voice. And when kids came to our office, I mean, they were not looking for political, you know, talking points. They weren't looking to take a selfie with me and to make it a very political moment. And I won't do that today, but I have reminded those same young people that their voices mattered. And because of the sense of urgency after that tragedy, that they, you know, created space for us to say, we have to do something, they started to see meaningful reform. And so, but as someone who just lives in Lansing, our hearts are still broken. And I still think about those kids in our local hospitals, parents not knowing, you know, what was going to be next, and students who were in halls next to where the site, you know, where the gunman was acting out, and how tearful and how, you know, just frustrated many of those students were, and just how angry they were that they didn't feel protected and safe. So lots of mixed emotions today. But they should just know that many of us in the Capitol are still thinking about the lives lost and the families that were impacted.
And like you mentioned, we saw, you know, action pretty quickly last year after, you know, this shooting occurred. At the time, it was still billed as sort of a beginning of gun control policies by the legislature. You know, do you still want to see more happen in the gun control realm?
I do. You know, I'm a responsible gun owner. I believe in the Second Amendment. I do also believe that with all of our rights, they do have limits. I've been a vocal advocate for common sense reforms, and there are many of us who are still very motivated to find common sense solutions to these issues. I mean, the start of last year in January, when we all were really excited about, you know, taking our oath, I was mourning the loss of a friend. Literally, I can see the place in which he was gunned down from my office in the Capitol. This amazing creative that was a music producer that was senselessly murdered at the hands of a gunman. This is pervasive in many of our communities. It's not just the mass shootings we see on school campuses. It's every day that guns are being placed in the hands of children, people with mental health issues, and everything in between. And so there's still too much work to be done, because we are still seeing so many tragedies because we have loose laws on the books that continue to allow this to happen. So it's definitely a first start, but we want to bring everyone along.
One of the new laws that's taking effect requires safe storage, which allows courts to remove guns from certain individuals. Do you think that those laws are enough? I mean, more specifically, do you think that laws like that are going to really move the needle in preventing gun violence and deaths?
I do. I think it's a start. I mean, the thing that, you know, with this big job that we have in the legislature, sometimes incremental change can seem too small, but it is making sure that we're progressing towards meaningful solutions long term. So yes, I mean, study after study shows that things like extreme risk protection orders and safe storage, these actions do save lives. We're obviously going to continue to work towards broader solutions, but they're big steps in the right direction.
Can you talk a little bit more about what other policies could come forward? So what are you interested in tackling in gun control specifically?
Yeah, so I think there's a number of concepts that are being floated. And again, I'm always someone who likes to work in a bipartisan fashion. I do think even things as simple as keeping kids safe, keeping hands out of violent offenders, I do think that those are things that can be worked on both sides of the aisle. But specifically for me, one of the things that I've been really interested in that I've worked in previous terms is how we can regulate and make gun shops safer. The lack of regulation has attributed to many of the gun stores, even in my community, being vandalized, broken into, and you see those firearms ending up on the street, and you see them being used to commit violent crimes. And so it's a very niche, very specific set of bills that I've been working on alongside my colleague, Representative Kara Hope. But how can we put together some common sense protections and making sure that we're regulating even gun shops so that, you know, we can, again, you know, ensure that many of these firearms don't make them on the streets and can harm our citizens. So small, but I think meaningful change.
Let's switch gears and talk about the budget. Last week kicked off the whole budget process with Governor Gretchen Whitmer presenting her wish list, as I like to call it, or her plan. What excited you most in her proposal? Do you have a main budget priority this year, and was it in there?
Yeah, you know, it's exciting to now have a year under my belt in terms of helping to create the huge state budget, right? And you know, we heard the governor's wish list, as you mentioned, and I was excited because a lot of the programs and initiatives that we co-created with the governor's team last year, all of a sudden we're seeing them in this year's budget proposal. The two things that stuck to me is a pre-K 14 education system, so making college more affordable to people. I worked for 10 years at the Michigan College Access Network. I mean, literally an organization in Michigan that tried to lower barriers to higher education for low-income students, students of color, kids like me who did not have parents that went to college and just needed help navigating the systems. Getting our financial aid house in order with the state will help young people and help older adults try to figure out what's available if they need financial assistance to help pay for college. It's too disaggregated. Last year, I put together language to create an Office of Post-Secondary Education to do just that. Months later, the governor creates MyLEAP, in which I'll be overseeing this first year. So to actually finally see an effort to streamline higher education financial aid options was really exciting. And then housing. I don't know what corner of our state, our most rural populations, our urban cores, who isn't talking about housing? I mean, I'm from Lansing. Every day there's a protest. The rent is too damn high. I have a sign in my office to remind me to keep housing at the top of mind. And I'm looking for all sorts of housing options, right? So I am a belief that we have to be helping people build generational wealth. And that doesn't just come from giving a landlord a check every month for rent. And so how are we investing in our current housing stock, as well as making more affordable options for senior citizens and the talent we're trying to create and attract in this state? So post-secondary education and housing were two things that, you know, really did it for me. But there's a lot more to unpack there. And I didn't spend my entire weekend reading the governor's proposal, but I'll be in this office reading most of it for the next, I don't know, couple months. So
So one key piece in the governor's proposal involved the other retirement benefits. I'm saying it wrong, but OPEB, you know what I mean. So essentially, the state has funded these benefits well the last several years. She wants to kind of put less in there because it is so well funded. But, you know, we're starting to see some sort of hesitation from some school groups. Republicans certainly are attacking this as well. You know, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think, you know, it's a good move to kind of put less money in this retirement fund?
You know, this is going to be a debate this year, right? I mean, you have some folks who are like, look, you're right, right? OPEB's fully funded. Maybe, you know, when we looked at how my predecessors approached paying down debt, they had an approach that was very aggressive, right? And in the next 10, 15 years, we will all thank ourselves, similar to when we, you know, manage our personal finances, right? You pay a lot up front, you can have a little bit of breathing room in the next decade or so. But then I do feel like there's this tension around, if we have paid down significant debt, how can we actually start to invest now in some critical areas that we know need help right now, that we can't afford to wait? And so there is going to be a tension there. And I do see both angles, but ultimately, I do believe that we can find a middle ground there, that we can ensure that we're still responsible in paying down debt, but that we're not neglecting current and urgent needs that we need to address now.
I want to talk a little bit about the budget process, because the last, I don't know, maybe 6 years or so, no matter who's in charge, we've seen that the bulk of these negotiations happen behind closed doors and votes happening within a day or two of these, you know, as you said, massive documents being released. Is this the right way to do it? Is it the only way to do it? What is your goal for the process this year?
Yeah. So, you know, I love this question because it, for many reasons, I think it's a point of pride in the way we started to address transparency last year. For example, last year, you know, after the governor presented her executive recommendations, the Senate presented our proposal, and we put out many of the enhancement grants, the earmarks, many of the investments that we were seeking to address. We did that pretty early on in the process when we presented our Senate recommendations. And then along the way, yes, many of our senators and our House members are having conversations with stakeholders, with community groups, all in very transparent ways. You're right, many of the negotiations do happen in a room in the Capitol, in which we kind of duke it out and get to the nitty gritty. But isn't that what our citizens expect of us? That they don't have to worry about line by line by line, because they are literally paying a full-time salary to members of these committees to do just that. And so, you know, I think there's always work to be done, but I'm also really excited that this was the first budget cycle that we, you know, required all of those enhancement grants to have a legislative sponsor next to them. Mm-hmm. Which is exciting, right? In years past, you just saw the appropriations chair's name, and, you know, half the time they may or may not have known what was even in some of those earmarks. This year is different, and I'm really excited about that.
You know, with the current process, do you think, you know, in talking, we can kind of focus on last year. Do you think, you know, stakeholders and residents, do you think they could provide meaningful feedback, you know, with the information they had and the timing that it was out?
Again, I know there's always more work to be done, but I can just tell you from our perspective, and it was a directive that I gave our Senate subcommittee chairs, that they needed to be in the face of their communities, in the face of these stakeholders, gathering that information. And they do have several months to do that. Again, not every concept is going to make it across the finish line, but what I can tell you is that we're constantly going to be looking for ways to open up the process. I do believe, you know, this is the people's house. These are tax dollars that we are being hopefully good stewards of. And so the more transparency and the more open the process, the better. So we'll keep working at it.
Well, one of the things that has particularly reporters, interested is these FOIA bills, the Freedom of Information Act legislation. The Senate has started its deliberation on bills to expand FOIA to the governor's office and the legislature. Let's start with this. Do you support these bills?
I do. Again, in the spirit of transparency, and I love the fact that many folks from like Voters Not Politicians and other stakeholders and just citizens come to my coffee hours and they have continued to press me on more transparency, more financial disclosure, more FOIA, just to unearth, you know, and just to make sure that people can see democracy at work. And so I'm excited to support the bills when they come before us. I obviously have to read them when they make it to my desk, but the spirit of the bills are spot on.
You know, as you know, this is the sixth time, I think, that these bills have come up before the legislature in some form. And there's always concerns around exemptions. I think, you know, even now there are concerns around the exemptions in the existing FOIA. You know, I know that these bills aren't right before the Senate right now, and they're not in, you know, before your committee. But what are your thoughts around, you know, the current iteration and if they go far enough?
Yeah, I mean, I want to go as far as practical and humanly possible. I do believe that, you know, whether it's the press or citizens, they should be able to see the various documentation that we're reviewing, some of the conversations that we're having as we're deliberating pretty important legislation that impacts people's quality of life. So I'm going to be pressing us to go further than most of some of the concepts that we've seen in the past. But also we have to be practical, and we have to make sure that we have the resources to implement these types of bills. So I'm not interested in a quick headline or a quick pat on the back from stakeholders. We want to get it right. I come from local government, and I remember being a county commissioner. We would have so many more guardrails and more mechanisms for transparency. And so I was a little bit surprised at how different the state level was. And so I'm coming in it with a fresh pair of eyes, and I want us to go as far as we can.
Why do you think it's important to subject the legislature and the governor's office to open records laws? What's your pitch on this?
Yeah, I mean, I believe that a educated citizenry is extremely powerful. And when individuals are able to see the documentation, see the discussions, I believe that it empowers citizens to have as much information as they need to not only see how complex many of the issues are that we're debating, but also be informed about who they should continue to vote in office. It's just important. And I trust the people, right? I'm kind of old school when my grandfather would tell us, like, all power to the people. I believe that. And knowledge is inherently power. So when folks know more about how the quote unquote sausage is being made, I think that they're able to make more informed decisions and advocate more effectively for issues that matter to them.
And, you know, we're all anxious for these bills, right? It's been a long time coming. Do you think this is the year, and how quickly, you know, do you think this can get to the governor's desk?
You know what? I have stopped predicting anything. If I had a crystal ball and an accent, I probably would be Miss Cleo, but I'm just going to be this the state senator who's going to, you know, make my vote early and often and try to be on the right side of history. But there does seem to be some momentum around these bills that I have not seen during my time in the legislature. So maybe this is the year, but I know there's a lot of motivation to get these done.
We will just have to wait and see. Senator Sarah Anthony, thank you so much for joining us here on Mishmash.
Thank you all. Appreciate you.
Thanks again to our guest, State Senator Sarah Anthony. Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station, in collaboration with the Gongwer News Service. Mishmash is hosted and produced by me, Shayna Roth, and Gongwer's Zach Gorchow, and the amazing Alethea Kasbin. Additional production and editing by the wonderful Hearns Laguerre Jr. Mixing, mastering, and music by the very talented Sam Bobian. Our digital team is Dave Kim, Sophia Joswiak, and Jenny Sherman. They are quite the dream team. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, who is, let's face it, one of the best. And our podcast manager is the excellent David Lyons. As always, if you listen to this podcast and want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review or comment wherever you listen. You can also subscribe or follow us on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you tell your friends about how much you've learned from Mishmash. We try very hard to keep things very approachable and educational for all of you. So make sure you send your friends a link. Remember, we're produced by a public radio station, which means we are listener supported. So if you really, really like this podcast, you can support WDET by going to WDET.org/give and become a member of WDET at WDET.org today. We'll talk to you next week.